Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, September 19th. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back our friend Chef Rick Orlando. Rick is a chef, which I mentioned. He's an entrepreneur, a writer, a leader of culinary tours of Italy. Today we'll talk about preserving the harvest, some twists on cooking as we transition into fall. Of course, he's ready to answer any food question you have. He's always a great guest on this program. 800-348-2551 is our number. If you want to talk to Chef Rick Orlando, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. An action-packed Food Friday with Chef Rick Orlando on the way right after the news. Why, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on Food Friday, we welcome back Chef Rick Orlando. He's a world traveler. He is the owner of the Richter Scale brand, makers of Rick Orlando's best line of hot sauce, barbecue sauce, and custom spice rubs, including the legendary Purple Haze psychedelic hot sauce. He is a chef instructor in the Capital Region and Kingston area for not-for-profits. He writes a monthly column. I think he still writes the column for Sante Food and Wine. He also hosts pop-up dinners around the region and hosts small groups on immersive food, farm, wine, and culture tours of Sicily. It's great to have Rick Orlando on the show when he's back in the States. The number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, if you want to talk to Rick, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Chef Rick Orlando, how you doing, man?
Good afternoon, Ray. I'm doing great. You know, there's something I want to add to that bio is that I'm the president of the Good Neighbor Food Pantry in Woodstock. So I'm actually running a not-for-profit food pantry. And in this time, it's a very urgent and important thing to do.
Right, you are. And how do people find out about it?
Well, you can go to goodneighborfoodpantry.org.
Okay.
We are feeding over 300 families a week of groceries. We don't cook. We supply groceries and produce. We have local farms giving us stuff. We have great products.
Dude, so it's goodneighborfoodpantry.org.
Yeah.
You know, good for you. Yeah. I don't know how you have the time. Anyway, email me that, and I'll have my producer put it on the next script when you're on. My producer being me. So when did you get back from Italy last?
Oh, I got back in late May.
Okay.
But I leave October 4th or 3rd, 4th, whatever, and I don't come back till November 16th.
Wow. Nice life, I'll tell you.
It's work, buddy, but it's fun. It's pleasurable, you know. One of the Italian guys told me something interesting. He said, your family, you're born with family, but when you travel and get out of your circle, you make new family. And I've made new family there.
So that's a month you'll be there?
I've got four tours. I've got Sicily, then Sicily, the Wild West. Then I do one from Piedmont through, we go through Parma and Modena down to Siena through Tuscany. And then I've got one more in Sicily, and then I'm home. And I've got a few breaks in between. I'll visit my son in Lucca for a while.
So you stay there, and then the tours come to you?
Yeah.
Genius. Yeah. You are a genius, Rick Orlando. By the way, speaking of genius, you got to tell me the name of the stuff. My wife has it in the fridge, and I've been using it on everything. It's a golden color. One of your sauces, sweet and tangy.
Dirty Blonde?
That might be it.
Dirty Blonde.
I'm using it on almost everything but peanut butter sandwiches
at this
point.
Yeah, it's pretty addictive.
Wow. I mean, what's in it?
Well, it's interesting because it started out kind of as a spicy honey mustard, but then we decided it needed to be brighter. And there's a little grapefruit and pineapple juice in it, and black pepper, which really opens it up.
She made chicken quesadillas last week. I used this pretty liberally mixed with sour cream. I got to tell you something. It's pretty good, man.
I've got something up your alley. I make pierogies.
Ooh.
I boil them briefly and put them in a pan with butter and with some onions and get them nice and caramelized. And right before they're done, I hit a nice dash of Dirty Blonde in there and let it coat them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Genius.
Okay. I eat the whole bag.
Rick Orlando is our guest today. So the topic, and you always see it. Some of the Hall of Famers here on Food Friday set their own topics. What are we talking about?
Well, today? I kind of set a topic. You know, we always talk about food and cooking, and I get all kinds of questions, and I'm good with that. But it's kind of the peak end of the harvest. So everything that I brought you to eat today has mostly ingredients from my garden.
Yeah.
And they're also all kind of Sicilian, which is interesting. But You can't see this on the radio.
It's a baseball bat. What is it?
It's called a Cocuzzo swash, also known as gagoots in Sicilian.
It's about 3 feet
long. A serpentine squash. Yeah, these guys grow. You run. They're growing like crazy. I've got like 10 more coming. You put the vine like over a fence, and then they grow. Otherwise, they curl up and look crazy.
Yeah.
And I made you soup with it.
Really?
And in the soup is the squash. It's a vegan soup. It's not vegan because instead of using stock, you put cheese bones in it. You know what cheese bones
are,
right?
No, I have no idea.
You know what cheese bones are?
Dude, look at me. Do I think I know what... I still eat at Arby's. I mean, you know what
when you get like a piece of pecorino or parmigiana and you have the rind?
Yeah.
We save the rind and you throw the rind in the soup for flavoring. But what's interesting about this soup, it's a peasant soup that's made with water, no stock, vegetables, carrots, celery, onions, potatoes, and the squash. But you also put the leaves of the squash in the soup, the smaller leaves. In Sicilian, they're called tenerumi, but the leaves eat almost like spinach, and they're really great. And I didn't know anything. I knew about them, I guess, as a kid. All I remember was my grandmother, who was off the boat, used to put one leaf in her tomatoes when she would can them. And I would say, how come you put those in the tomatoes, Nonna? She'd say, so no go bad.
Ah.
They have tannic acid. They're a natural preservative.
Does that give you heartburn after a while if it sits for
too
long?
No, because it cooks out in here. And using the smaller leaves, too.
Yeah.
But it's just like a super delicious vegetable soup.
And what's the... Okay, this looks like some sort of salsa.
It's caponata, which is a sweet and sour eggplant relish from Sicily's eggplant. Onions, lots of celery, pine nuts, raisins, capers. So you got salt, sweet and sour. It's made with vinegar.
These are your own grown eggplants?
Yeah, the eggplant are ours, eggplant. And then this is pesto a la Trapanese, Trapani pesto from western Sicily. When Trapani is on the western corner of Sicily, or Trapani, as they say in Sicily, and the boats from Genoa used to connect from there to bring product back and forth, right? Genoa's up north.
Yeah.
Well, Genovese make pesto. The pesto that we eat normally is called Genovese pesto. It's from the Genoa area. The Sicilians adapted it. So this has basil, but almonds, because they grow tons of almonds instead of pine nuts, a little cheese, garlic, and tomatoes. And you actually puree the tomatoes right into the pesto, and it's really, really good. I brought you some bread. You can also throw some in the soup.
I will definitely try all of this in a moment. Speaking of pine nuts, you know, some of the Italian restaurants that I go to or occasionally will go to used to have pine nuts in the meatballs, and they stopped for some reason. Maybe it's allergies or whatever. But you just said almonds. Can you put almonds in meatballs?
Well, if you crack them up, you could put anything in a meatball.
Have you ever done it?
Never put almonds in. No. So here's a story with pine nuts. About 30 or 40 years ago, a fungal disease from Oregon got to Italy and started infecting the particular type of pine trees where the certain pine cones where pine nuts came from. They've lost 70% of them.
Whoa.
That's why Italian pine nuts, which are long and sweet, are almost impossible to find or are really expensive. Most of the pine nuts you find now are Chinese, and I read some weird things about the way they process them. I buy them, but I don't gobble them like I used to. And they're cheap, you know, as opposed to expensive pine nuts. But if you want to substitute pine nuts in pesto, there are a couple ones you could use. You can use almonds. Now, this is Trapanese, so it has the tomatoes, but you can use almonds. You can use walnuts, which are used a lot, but they add a little bitterness. But I have found sunflower seeds replicate the texture of pine nuts a lot because they're not as hard.
But not the taste.
No, but close. I mean, to me, when I'm making regular pesto, I use sunflower seeds a lot, and it's very similar. And cheap.
Rick
cheapity
Orlando.
Cheap.
Is our guest today. Chef Rick Orlando is here every so often when he's not on a tour to Italy or doing something important. 800-348-2551 if you have a question, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Susie in Aiken, South Carolina wrote in, I have an abundance of basil, but no food processor or a way to make pesto. What else can I do to preserve my basil and enjoy it during the winter? And that's from Susie in South Carolina.
Well, you could make pesto in a mortar and pestle if you don't have a food processor, because that's where the word pesto comes from, the pestle. It's tough. I mean, basil is tough because it gets black when you freeze it. It still tastes okay, but it gets black. You can take it and chop it up with a knife, nice and small, and put it in olive oil and keep that olive oil around and have like basil oil to drizzle on things. I'm sure other people have other things they do with it. You can also make lots of tomato sauce and put it in the tomato sauce and freeze that or can it. But other than that, you know, I tell people, you know, eat a lot of it now. If you can't make pesto, say goodbye and just buy one of those little plants in the grocery store and have that in the winter or grow it in your window, which I do.
Once you make pesto, you could freeze it though, right?
Sure. Yeah, you can freeze pesto. We used to make at the restaurant, we just called it basil coulis. It was basil in olive oil. We would just puree the basil with olive oil and put it in Ziploc bags, and it would still lose its color a bit. It oxidizes, but it was delicious. We'd swirl it into soups, into sauces and stuff. But yet, you know, the saving of basil thing, everyone has their routines. I hear so many stories about it. But I don't know. You put a couple seeds in a pot in your window and you have basil by November, and it just keeps growing. So it depends on how much you use.
I have a question about some of these dried. Let's take a break here, and then we'll try some food, and we'll get to the calls. 800-348-2551 is our number. Chef Rick Orlando joins us. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you. It's Food Friday, and we're joined by Chef Rick Orlando. Rick, the soup is crazy good. As you say, grandma soup.
It's just beautiful vegetables. They're not too small. They're nice because you get... one of the things that we talk about as chefs is texture. And vegetables have such great texture. And if they're cut too small, you miss that experience.
Yeah.
I like to bite down on the piece of celery, the piece of carrot. It's really delicious.
You know, I was thinking about texture yesterday during the gardening show. Dale Isla Riggs brought in five varieties of plum and cherry tomatoes. And they each had a different texture. Some of them were crunchy almost.
Yeah.
And it's amazing the difference in texture you can get. Now, you said to me in the break that you make 12 quarts of this?
This is the kakuzu squash. This one is about 30 inches long.
Right. So that was in the soup. It's good.
One.
Yeah.
And made
one.
About 12 quarts. Yeah. I've got about 10 more. I've harvested two. I've given a couple away. I've got more coming, and they'll keep coming. The weather's nice, and they like it when it's dry. They just start fruiting.
So they've had a good year. It's been very dry.
When it's fruiting, when it gets dry, the plant says, oh, my God, I have to make seeds to survive. So they start making plants. They go from flower to plant. It's easy. The celery, carrots, onion, and potatoes. I put recipes on my Substack, rickorlando.substack.com, if you don't mind.
You have to tell the producer about that, too. He'll put it on the link.
Yeah. And so the recipe's there. The recipe for the caponata's there, and the recipe for the pesto's there. But it's just simple. It's really... You know, a lot of these foods from southern Italy are not about fantastic chefy techniques. They're about fantastic ingredients prepared really simply so you taste the ingredients.
How many vegetables? I see carrots.
Carrots, celery, onion, potatoes, okay. And then the squash.
Now, to make 12 quarts of something like this, how big is your garden?
It's not very big.
Really?
I have two patches about the size of this studio. This, not the building, this studio here. Probably 12 by 15. Then I've got a few other patches. I see a spot. Oh, that's a nice sunny spot. I'll put a few bluestone around it and dig a hole and put the horseradish in there or put the, you know, sunchokes in there. So, no, it's kind of random. Nice. When I went to southern Italy the first time, I looked around and I said, oh, my God, I am so Italian. It's like, it's looked like my yard. It's like lots of little gardens, things growing all over the place. The perfectly rusted oil can with half a logo left, strategically placed so you see it when you're sitting on the deck. You know, all that stuff.
When I lived down in Brewster a couple of years, decades ago, my next-door neighbor was this old Italian guy, and he had just what you describe, only he also had a rooster, which woke me up every single morning.
That means he had eggs somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I frankly, he was a scary dude. I didn't really want to complain about the rooster.
Roosters are pretty aggressive. I mean, you know, I remember years ago, my son was working at a sanctuary, animal sanctuary. And one of the women that worked there, and it was a vegan sanctuary. My son was omnivorous, but he was great with animals. And the woman said, what are we going to do about this rooster? He keeps biting me every time I go there. And my son just said, make soup.
Ooh,
and she didn't like that
answer.
You're
fired. Yes. Teresa writes in, okay, back to the pesto. If you want to avoid significant color change in pesto, add a lot more olive oil before freezing. When I'm ready to use it, I pop the thawed pesto in the food processor with a couple handfuls of baby spinach from the store. It brightens beautifully. It's got a wonderful fresh taste. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, olive oil is anaerobic, right? It'll block oxygen from, so sure. Yeah, that makes good sense. If anybody else has any tips on it, I'm spoiled. I worked in restaurants for so many years that I always had to create a basil in the cooler year-round.
Yeah.
But now, like, I started plants about 3 weeks ago in like about an 18-inch rectangular planter, and they're all about 4 to 6 inches tall, and I'm putting that in the window. So when those are fully grown—
now, or do you bring them in?
They're out on the deck, ready to come in.
Right.
And then when those are just about grown, I'll start another one. But they also sell in supermarkets now, those little potted ones. They're the root ball. You can put that in dirt, and it'll grow, or water.
I mean, but do you know are you at all concerned about where those plants came from when you see them in a big store like that?
Am I concerned about it? No, because I don't need a pound of basil a day. If I throw a handful in a dish once a week, you know, it's like breathing the air behind a school bus.
So you said that the pesto doesn't freeze. Well,
no, pesto freezes okay.
It does, but it changes color.
Well, unless you either put it in a really airtight container with a little float of olive oil on it, it's a good way to do it.
This stuff that you buy in the stores, the spices and the spice rack, they'll keep for a long time, though, right? Were they freeze dried?
Yeah. I mean, I blend spices, right?
Right.
And herbs, and I'm pretty strict about buying non-irradiated spices. There's a company that makes really clean. Some are organic, but most are non-irradiated. Most of the spices you buy in the store are treated with sulfur, which keeps, you know, the mold inhibitor, and a lot of them are irradiated, so they stay green for a really long time.
The sulfur's got to change the taste, though, doesn't it?
I mean, I think so. I've if you read some of my recipes, they'll say, like, if you have dried basil in your pantry, throw it out now.
Really?
Yeah. The only dried herb I like is oregano.
Okay.
And so I had a nice, really popular Substack with this is you grow oregano. You make a little patch. It could be like 2x2, 4x4. It doesn't matter. You throw oregano seeds in either in the fall or early winter, throw some mulch on them. They'll come up.
Right.
By June or maybe 4th of July, they're starting to flower. When they start to flower, you snip them at about 6 inches. You take the rest of it, you tie a string, and hang it upside down. You crumble it into jars.
What's the hanging upside down do?
Well, when they hang upside down, they dry nicely, and the energy comes down, so they have good flavor. And you crumble them into jars, like a little mason jar like this, and you have dried oregano that tastes so different from the commercial brands that you buy.
Interesting.
Spices are different. We don't grow a lot of spices here. Most spices are imported, but herbs, I mean, most of the herbs you buy that are in jars are coming from Colombia and Brazil right now, but so many of them dry well. So what doesn't dry well is basil and cilantro and parsley. They dry horribly. They get black. They have no flavor. But rosemary, thyme, dill, they dry beautifully.
And we've grown all that in our garden and in pots and whatnot.
The rosemary dries so good that when you throw it in there, it almost feels like it's fresh when you bring it back.
Our guest today is Chef Rick Orlando, owner of the Richter Scale brand, makers of Rick Orlando's best line of hot sauces and rubs, and he's a chef instructor. You doing any classes?
I just did my last class at Capital Cooks in Colony, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Last Friday, and then I'm off for the rest of the year. I'm going to be in Italy, and then in December, I'm going to get a little possible knee operation, so I might end up doing a last minute December class.
Now, when you're on these tours, you really got to move, so a knee operation might lay you up for a tour or two.
No, I'm getting a partial down at the Hospital for Special Surgery. The doctor told me 3 to 4 weeks I'll be back on
my
feet.
It's amazing.
He said you can play pickleball in a month, and I said good because I've never played pickleball.
Bump. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's things about preserving the harvest today and some fall cooking tips. You know, this is a tough time because it's really warm out. And then by next week, by tomorrow, it'll be a 70, maybe 70 for a high, and the cool temperatures start rolling in.
But we haven't had any rain. It's been so
it's
dry.
It's so tough.
And I looked at the weather forecast. The next rain I saw was a week from Saturday. So it's still dry and warm. The gardens are going great. I don't know about you, but my garden, some things are done, But some things are really, my squash are out of control right now.
Really?
Yeah, well, these guys, I've got these tromboncino, I've got spaghetti squash, they're growing beautifully.
Now, are you doing raised beds or right into the ground?
Kind of hybrid. So
what do you
mean? On a little bit of a hill.
Yeah.
So I took some planks and trellis down and then threw garden soil and some compost on them, and every year I add a little more dirt, but they get down to the natural dirt. They're not like they're not carpeted underneath.
Have you learned in all your time going to Italy, and gosh, you must have been spending over the last several years months and months if you mm-hmm. add it up, have you learned anything about growing some of these things over there from the old timers?
Yeah.
Do you want to share any of it?
No, I've learned a ton. One of the things I've learned is that don't mess with them. Make sure your soil is fertile early. Make sure they get water.
Do they check pH and things like that over there?
They have natural ways of doing it. They can tell by the weeds. But one of the things that most of them do, this is really interesting, as a matter of fact, in Sicily it's really popular, is after you harvest, they plant different types of mustard greens and stuff, mustard seeds, in the fall and mulch them so that they're the first thing that comes up in the spring, and then you till them in. They bring a nitrogen into the soil. They're like a natural fertilizer. There's so many natural methods. Of course, they use chicken manure and a lot of mulching. But no, and the other thing I learned that's just really cool is that one of these guys, my friend Ignazio,
great name.
He grows cherry tomatoes, and he leaves them on the vine until they're almost dry.
Interesting.
Really a long time, and they are so, I mean, there's no leaves left. You go there late October, there's tomatoes hanging in clusters with no leaves left.
What part of Italy?
Sicily, which is by October, Sicily gets down to the high 50s at night in this, like weather like now.
Yeah.
It's like October.
Well, it's funny you mention this because we have one plum tomato and two cherry tomatoes. That's what we have in our pot.
I heard.
And they're turning, they're green, they're big enough, and I don't know whether to take them off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
Well, you heard I sent you an email yesterday.
Oh, that's right. You're the guy who sent that in.
So one
put
of the
them
things
in a bag?
You can definitely put green tomatoes in a bag, and if you add an apple or a banana, they give off a particular gas that helps the tomatoes to ripen, and they're good, and they get red. They lose a little texture. So my friend in Sicily showed
bushy?
Me a little bit, slightly. Yeah. My friend in Sicily actually showed me, you rip them out by the roots and hang them upside down on a fence or in your basement against a plank on the wall.
Yeah.
And
you leave the everything.
And you leave the roots.
Yeah.
And they continue to absorb nutrients from the plant.
Is that
as
a wives' tale or is that true?
I've got them going now. I'll show you pictures when I get home.
Really?
Yeah.
And so it definitely improves it. All right. We might try that. I don't know. Number here.
What,
are
you going to ripen your two tomatoes that way?
Well, this was a gift, man. It's not like we even tried. We started late in the season.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
The number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a food question for Chef Rick Orlando, you can email as well, voxpop@wamc.org. What's this stuff?
This is called caponata.
All right, let me have a spoon. I'll just try one
spoon in it.
I won't double dip.
You can put it on bread.
Tell me about it, man.
So caponata is, if there was a national dish of Sicily, it's caponata.
Oh, my God, this smells amazing.
And it's historically really cool because
eggplant, I see that.
Yeah, it's an eggplant relish. However, there are a million variations on it. Different parts of the island make it differently, but it goes back to the Jewish and Arab culture that was dominant in Sicily in the 900, 1000, 1100,
yeah.
The whole idea of sweet and sour. So that has both raisins and capers in it, so salty and sweet.
Mm.
Vinegar and sugar or honey, a little tomato product, which they didn't have back then, eggplant, celery, onions, pine nuts.
What do you mean they didn't have tomato product back then?
There was no tomatoes until the 1500s in Europe. They come from here. Tomatoes are a New World product.
You're kidding me.
Come on. You didn't know that?
Honestly, I didn't know that.
Tomatoes, potatoes, pumpkins, chocolate, they're all from the New World. They were all brought over in the 1500s. Tomatoes weren't really prevalent in Spain and Italy until like the late 1500s, early 1600s.
Rick, this stuff is amazing. What would I put it on besides bread?
Well, people have it as an appetizer on bread. I love it on a sub, like a salty cold cut sub.
Oh,
I put
yeah.
the caponata
but
right on the sub.
But not too much, right?
No, you just put it on there like a relish. I also like it. I'll do swordfish on the grill with a little olive oil, lemon, maybe a little oregano, salt, and then we spoon a little of this on the side. You can kind of eat it with the swordfish. But what's nice about it is there's so many variations. So in Catania, which is on the east, when the eggplant are out of season, it's not like here where you go to the supermarket and you get the same thing all year. Things are out of season, they're out of season.
Right.
It's a really great way to live.
And you like that. A lot of chefs love that.
I love that because the environmental impact of what our supermarkets demand to have the same bins filled with the same products 52 weeks a year.
Yeah.
It's a very unnatural thing, but we go to Peru, we go to South Africa, we import stuff from Israel, we import from all over the place, air freight, boat freight, you know, packaging. You can't pick it ripe, you got to pick it unripe because it's all this time in transit. No, I love that. But in Catania, they use potatoes in the off season. And they take little cubes of potatoes and they kind of cook them in olive oil till they're tender and make the same thing. I've had it with chunks of fish in it. Originally,
I could see that.
It was a fish dish originally.
Yeah.
Caponata, the word capone, Al Capone, right?
Right.
Is their name for what we call mahi-mahi, like the dolphin fish.
I'll be darned.
And they would do, this was a recipe to pickle the fish, to preserve the fish with sugar and vinegar and nuts and raisins. And through poverty, it evolved to eggplant. All those piatti poveri, those plates of the poor, have become the most legendary dishes.
And it's
right?
funny, you know, eggplant to me is one of the best comfort foods going. It's
mm-hmm.
it's substantial every time. How long will this keep?
In the refrigerator, at least a month, but you can can it, preserve it, can it. And we can talk about that. I don't want people doing it unless they know what they're doing, but there's so much, there's great books on it, food preservation books, there's great internet. You test the pH, and if you can get the pH a little below 5 by adding maybe a little more vinegar, a little more tomato.
Making it more acid.
Right, then you seal it, and you put it in the pot of water or in a pressure cooker, and you cook it for 45 to 50 minutes until the lids go and suck in. Because I'll probably make about 24 jars of that and put it
Amazing.
Downstairs. And it's great, because in the middle of winter, it's snowy out, and you get, you know what, I'm going to take out my tenerumi, my kagutsa soup, and a little caponata, and have a little taste of summer that I made. It was all mine. I don't know if anybody else out there cans, but one of the things that cracks me up in our culture, and only in our culture, is that we're really afraid of it. No one else is afraid of it.
Our Everybody. Grandmothers weren't afraid of
right.
it.
Right. No one else is afraid of it. We're horrified because one person had botulism 100 years ago. You know? I mean, listen, there are a lot of rules, and you got to follow the rules, but they're not hard rules.
Yeah.
They're easy. You know what I mean? The way I look at it is if, you know, your grandmother can do it, you can do it.
You know, I'm not sure it would work for this, but Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough were here about a month ago, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a little
heard
more
them.
Than. Yeah. And they have this book on cold canning. And I wonder if that would work with this.
I don't know. You know, I've never tried it. I always kind of cook it. And that makes it a little mushier, but it's still a great schmear.
Yeah.
And who doesn't love a great schmear, a great and sweet and sour schmear?
Rick Orlando is our guest. It's 800-348-2551.
Are we too entertaining?
Well, I think you're very entertaining. And frankly, the food is really good. WAMC.org is our website where you can make a secure online pledge. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. What's this, Booker T? Yeah, Booker T and the MGs. Let's go. No, darn it, I won't do any podcasts. Rick Orlando, you're always trying to move ahead. Our guest today is Chef Rick Orlando.
We're day tripping.
800-348-2551. The lockbox is open. Please make a pledge if you haven't done so yet. And you can go to wamc.org, make a secure online pledge. Isabella writes in, cover crops. The process of using crops to add natural mulch is called cover cropping. It can be used for a variety of purposes and is a super interesting topic in organic farming and gardening. My favorite is sorghum sudangrass, which breaks up compacted soil and mines for phosphorus. It's a half-season crop that thrives in hot weather. Do you know anything about that?
I do know about that, you know. And the crop that you see often in Sicily is it's kind of a cross between arugula and a mustard green, but
yeah.
It's a beautiful red flower.
Yeah.
So if you drive in the farms, the hills of Sicily in late March, early April, it is a show. flowers everywhere.
Yeah.
And then it's tilled under, and the wheat goes in. And that's where they grow the wheat. But, yeah, it's a natural it works with the phosphorus. It's some of them are antibacterial, but a lot of them they bring nitrogen into the soil also. So they're like natural fertilizers, and it's great. And it also keeps other weeds from taking over that crop, that area, because once they grow in, they fill in, and you don't get a lot of weeds. It's very smart.
Nell writes in, question for Rick, have you ever had smoked swordfish carpaccio? Just had it in Milan. Amazing.
Absolutely I have, yes. And it's interesting because it's cold smoked, and it really just, it's like buttery ham, but fish.
Now, how do you smoke it?
They keep the temperature below 125, 120. It's a long, it's brined and then smoked. Yeah, they slice it super thin. The Italians are masters. And, you know, when people go to Italy, one of the things they're blown away by is how much raw fish they eat. Crudos and carpaccios and smoked. But
so the smoked swordfish would be technically raw?
In America.
Interesting.
Yeah. Just like a gravlax is technically raw. That's why most of the salmon is, vacuum-packed
right.
And stuff. And the hot smoked salmon is like cooked. It changes color. It changes texture. The proteins coagulate. It turns into a different thing. But when we have our first meal in Sicily, in Taormina, with the Discover Sicily tour, where we do the triangle around the island, we go to a place called Rosso Divino, and their specialty is crudo and dry-aged seafood.
Dry-aged seafood.
Yes.
So I've heard of steaks that are dry-aged.
Dry-aged seafood. Under control temperature.
I don't know.
You want to eat butter. You
really?
Want to eat a piece of dry-aged tuna. It is like butter.
Really?
But, you know, my guests are like, what do we do with these shrimp? Oh, you rip off the head, you suck out the juice, you peel, you eat, put some lemon and olive oil, and you eat the raw shrimp. My granddaughter's favorite food, and she's five, what they call gambero rosso. They're little tiny, not little tiny, but little shrimp with the head on and shell on.
Yeah.
And give them to you cold with olive oil and a lemon, and you squeeze it on and eat the whole thing, shell and all, like popcorn.
Americans, we're kind of getting away from all that.
Well, it's an interesting thing, because many of my guests, they say, I don't know if I can do raw shrimp. And by the end, you know what? We're eating raw shrimp.
I did a foraging show years and years ago here, and the lady was a genius. I forgot her name now. She brought an eel. And I said, you know what? She found it in a creek. I said, you know what? I'm gonna pass on one of the only things I've ever passed on in this show.
So eel story. My grandparents always had eel for the holidays, but I grew up in kind of the projects for when I was in like middle school. And my neighbor across the street, Willie Gully, African-American guy, big truck driver, and his two sons, we all played Little League together. He would go eeling, and he would take it home and gut it and skin it and flour it and fry it and bring it out in little chunks about, an inch long, and just put him on a plate with a bottle of like low-end hot sauce, like trapeze or whatever.
Yeah.
And we would just eat fried eel, and no one knew what it was. We just thought it was like chicken wings. They were delicious.
You got me to eat gator, but that was in a gumbo. But what
does eel
taste
like? Catfish or a little bit of a muddy-tasting fish, but good, you know?
All right, let's go back to our phone lines with Chef Rick Orlando. It's 800-348-2551. We'll go to North Adams. Nathan, you're on.
Hey, how's it going? This is Nathan. I have a weird question.
Okay.
I'm not too sure if you're going to be able to answer it.
All right.
So I had this weird fruit going in my backyard, and I figured out it was Japanese quince. I know you can make it into a jelly, but I was wondering, is there anything else you'd be able to do with it?
Well, they are quince. They are interesting.
They are very tough fruit.
I've made chutneys with them, but the most popular thing, I think, is what the Spanish call membrillo, which we just had at my cooking class last week, which is a paste.
Well, I missed out.
Oh, I've had the quince paste before.
Yes, it's beyond a jelly. You cook it. I mean, it took me about 12 hours. I made it once. I got about 5 pounds of them at a market. And, well, I'll buy it from now on. But
it's very good.
Literally, a little sugar, you cook them down until they're soft, run them through the food mill, and then cook it slow and slowly and slowly. And what happens is you release so much of the liquid that the pectin becomes so dominant that when you pour it into a form, you could then slice it afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty much. I mean, I've made some cool chutneys with it, mixing it with. I've also made crabapple chutney. You know, you'd have to sweeten it enough and maybe add some ginger, some chili, some toasted cumin. But you can make chutney with it, but that's pretty much it, yeah.
All right, Nathan.
Okay, and how do you spell that, chutney?
The chutney or the membrillo, you mean? Are you talking about the...
How do you How do you spell it so I can look it up? Sorry.
Well, M-E-M-B-R-I-L-L-O, but you can also just look up Quince.
Okay.
You can look up Quince Paste. You can get it online pretty easily.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go over to Rensselaer. And Richard, you're on with Chef Rick Orlando.
Yeah, for all those ways you had of preserving tomatoes, do they have to be done before the first frost or just the killing frost?
For preserving tomatoes? You mean picking them off the plant?
Yeah, or hanging the plant upside down, all those things
I wait for them to be on the break, right? So on the break means they're getting a little bit of color at the top. Not a lot, you know, they're not fully ripened. So it depends on where you are, what your garden's facing north or south, how much sun it gets. You have to judge by the tomatoes. If they're hard green, they're not going to turn. You know, you need to wait for them to get just on the break, just a little bit of yellowness, you know, either near the bottom or on the side. You see that happening. And what's interesting, I started doing this a couple of years ago, because every year I let my tomatoes get rice nice and red. And every year I'd go to my garden and every third or fourth tomato would have a bite.
Yep.
The size of, like, maybe you took two finger and pinched it, right?
Yeah.
And I said, you know, what is it? Is it a squirrel? Is it a chipmunk? You know, I have all kinds of critters where I live.
Yep.
And then I read online that certain animals like woodchucks, groundhogs, they see red. They can see it when it's red.
They don't see
it when it's green, or they don't notice it when it's green.
And they have a bite, and they're like, man,
I don't like that, but maybe this one's better.
That's
and they wreck
hilarious.
Half your tomatoes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, just wait for them to be on the turn, and then you can do it. And, you know, an interesting thing with tomatoes that I also learned from someone years ago is if you have ripe tomatoes, and you can go to a farmer's market now and get the beautiful canning tomatoes, which are the ones that are a little cracked or maybe a little bruised,
yeah.
But you get a discount, you just take a little knife or a little device and take the core out, put them in a paper bag and wrap it with tape and put it in the freezer, and they'll freeze with the skin on. And when you take them out of the freezer, you just hot tap water in a bowl, you drop them in there, and the skins come right off.
Amazing.
And then you can make fresh tomato sauce.
Genius.
You can make gazpacho.
Richard, you want to follow up?
No, thank you.
All right.
All right, thanks.
Thanks for the call. Have a great weekend. 800-348-2551. It's Chef Rick Orlando. Let's go to Ellen, who is on her way to Albany. Ellen, are you in a spaceship?
Hi.
Are you running?
No, but I'm in a car. The other person is driving.
Okay.
But I wish I was in a spaceship because what's going on in the country, but we won't get onto that.
Yeah, it's a different
show.
Thank
you for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm wondering, since I started planting late, so all my tomatoes are green. Does Rick have a good recipe for pickled dill tomatoes? You
for
know,
pickled,
when you
pickled
want to
green pickle? Tomatoes? Yeah.
With dill.
With dill.
Well, you can add dill, sure. So, the pickling recipe that I use for green tomatoes and also for half sours is a 50-50 mix of salted water and white vinegar,
uh-huh.
right?
Yes.
So,
uh-huh.
you put your tomatoes in a jar. Sanitized jar. You can refrigerate them so you don't have to worry about them turning, right? You store them in the refrigerator pickles.
Right.
And the salt should be about 3% salt to water. I know that doesn't sound like easy to do, but it's pretty easy if you weigh your water. But basically, it's about a teaspoon plus per quart of water. But 3%. You bring it to a rolling boil and you put the tomatoes in a jar. And you pour it about halfway over the tomatoes, and then you add the vinegar, you add your dill. If you're going to add garlic, you put the garlic in the salt water and boil it as well. You're going to sanitize that garlic. So it's a mix of vinegar, white vinegar, and salted water is all you really need.
Huh.
You put your dill in there. You can stick a sprig of fresh dill. You can put a teaspoon of dry dill. Dry dill works just as fine for pickling. And you pour the hot brine. So you make the hot brine, salt water and vinegar, nice and hot, boiling. Pour it over them, seal them up. And the tomatoes will cook just enough and stay crunchy from that boiling water sitting on them, but like steep in it. And they're delicious. If the tomatoes are too big, obviously, it's going to be harder. You want to do it with like smaller or medium-sized tomatoes so they get done through. But that's how I do it.
Okay.
And I make them every year. Yeah.
What do you think, Ellen?
I think that sounds great. Can you cut them if they're large?
You could, but the insides will start to come out a little bit, you know? I mean, it depends on how you do it. I've tried it before. I've had mixed results. I quartered some one time, and some of them came out nice. Some of them, the juicy part kind of came out into when I took them out of the jar. So, but you can try.
Okay.
You can also do like a really quick pickle, which is slice them about not too thin, about maybe the thickness of my pinky or your forefinger, and put them in a Pyrex dish, you know, even, and pour the hot brine over there, and then you can eat them the next day.
Oh, okay. There you go. All right, Ellen, thanks a lot for the call. It's 800-348-2551. Chef Rick Orlando is our guest. Let's go to Who's a Tonic and Chris. Hi, Chris. You're on.
Hi, Chris.
Hey there. Do you ever cook with hot peppers and peppers?
Oh, yeah. Do I cook with hot peppers? I make hot sauce.
Ah.
I make cook with lots of hot peppers, yes.
How about Louisiana hot sauce?
Do I cook with Louisiana hot sauce?
It.
I make some. I use it. Sure. I like those. Those are, we call those entry level hot sauces. They're not that hot, but they're really good. I taught my kids when they were young to put a few drops in their ketchup for their French fries, and then a few more drops. So by the time they were 9 or 10 years old, they were ready to start eating real spicy food. Sure.
Okay. All right, Chris. Have a great weekend. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Anything new from the Richter scale brand?
Well, yes. So let's talk about ancient grain pasta.
Oh.
So
no,
I.
Hang on. Amy Halloran and I have talked about ancient grains often, and I'm still not sure. Is this something of a gimmick?
Not in Sicily. Not in Italy.
All right, explain.
So in Sicily, there have been ancient grains that are related to farro, related to spelt. As a matter of fact, I had a long conversation with Don Lewis, the master of bread from Wild Hive Farm, about this.
Yeah.
And he also agrees there's unique 2,000-year-old varieties, never changed. Most of the ancient grains in America have had to be adapted to our soil.
Okay.
Sicily's very dry, so they don't have to worry about fungicide, don't have to worry about mold. So here's the thing. My wife has been gluten-free for 25 years. She has not celiacs, but she has reactions.
Yeah, and sensitive.
Yeah, and she can eat this pasta. Huh? Almost everyone who comes on my tours is fascinated because they can eat the pasta and some
but
of the bread.
But how does it taste?
You don't taste a difference.
Really?
I'll bring you a bag. It is incredible. So I have a family that's been making this pasta now generationally, and I import it. And I imported last fall a bunch and started selling it online, and we've got so many testimonials on my store website saying, I could finally eat pasta again, because it doesn't make you bloat. But I truly believe, there's a whole other show, and I should go beyond with Amy, it's not the gluten, it's what we've done to wheat in America.
I think that's basically her contention,
right,
as well.
But the stuff from Sicily has not been changed, and they're really, if you go there, you'll understand, they are so psychotically adamant about their ingredients being the best,
yeah,
and they don't screw with them. So, this is a long story short. I called my friends in early August. Said, "Hey, I'm running out of pasta. I need X amount, like five pallets. Got to go on a boat." The company I did it with last time said, "Well, we can't do it this time. We're doing something else. Why don't you do it yourself?" So I said, "All right." So I called my company and that I'm buying it from, husband and wife team. And I said, what do I do? He said, well, you have to set up an importing license. So after 4 weeks of dealing with Homeland Security and all this stuff, I'm finally an importer.
All right, like Mr. Bond.
Yeah, and
Importer-exporter.
It'll be on the boat soon. I'll have it soon. But that sells like crazy. And I also make tomato sauce. I make a 5-ingredient tomato sauce. Extra virgin olive oil, organic tomatoes, garlic, salt, basil.
Didn't you bring me some of that pasta from Sicily one of these times?
Yeah.
And I think I didn't make it, but it was made for the family.
Yeah.
And they went crazy.
It's delicious.
Crazy.
It's got great texture.
Yeah.
And you cook it al dente. And here's another fun fact to know about pasta. In Italy, they eat their pasta very al dente. Americans sometimes are shocked at how al dente. Not crunchy, but very al dente.
Yeah.
So there's a science behind that. Now, my friend who's a culinary instructor there, who's actually from Ireland, but he lives in Palermo and he teaches Sicilian cooking, which is another story, said they eat it al dente now because that's the way they like it. But it was started because, number one, if you cook it al dente, it digests much more slowly, so it's lower glycemic. And you don't crash.
Amazing.
And yeah, so it's lower glycemic when you cook it al dente, and you eat less because you get very filled up. I mean, I literally, when I take the pasta that we bring from Sicily, I weigh 30 or 40 grams per person. So that's like less than a half a box for two people.
Amazing.
So the American pasta, we'd cook the whole freaking box.
This is old world wisdom. All right, yeah. Let's grab one more email, one more call here before we wrap it up with Rick Orlando. Peggy in Wingdale, or no, Penny in Wingdale says.
Wingdale?
Yeah, down down a ways. I think Dutchess County, I think, maybe. Wingdale, maybe. I'm not sure. I love the red pickled onions some restaurants put on their salads. Is there any easy recipe for that?
Yeah, easy. Slice some red onions. Put them in a non-reactive pot. Well, slice some red onions. Put some red wine vinegar in a non-reactive pot and bring it to a rolling boil. Throw the onions in and turn it off and put a lid on them. Let them sit. And you have pickled onions.
That's it?
Yes. You can color it. You can put a bay leaf in there. You can put mustard seeds. But that's all you need is good vinegar, not red vinegar, red wine vinegar, rolling boil. Put the onions in. Turn it off. Let them sit there. Perfect.
You know what, man? Here's a nice compliment from Kitty in New Paltz. Thank you for the most emotionally nutritious and much-needed hour of conversation. I'm getting right back online to donate to the Lockbox. That's from Kitty and New Paltz. Kitty. Mwah!
Thank you, Kitty.
Quickly, let's go to Holyoke. Sam, you're on. You got about a minute.
Get him out
there. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I have a quick question I've been wondering about. I cook peppers all the time. I eat mostly bell peppers, sometimes medium heat peppers. I cook them in a black skillet pan the same way. Most of the time, they come out sort of caramelized and velvety and soft and almost like a gooiness to it, like you let them cook. But other times, I'll cook peppers, the same peppers, I'm doing the same thing, and they just never get soft. They cook, but they never get soft.
Do you use oil or you just cook them in a dry pan or in oil?
I use black skillet, black cast iron pan with butter.
With butter?
And I just can't figure out the difference. Yeah.
Interesting. You're talking red, green.
You
know, like a red pepper or yellow pepper has got a much higher sugar content than a green pepper. A lot of red peppers, there are thicker fleshed ones and thinner fleshed ones that are going to have more sugar. It sounds like you're digging the sugar. I do it in extra virgin olive oil the same way. But the sugars come out. So I think it has to do with the sugar content of the peppers. Not every pepper is going to be the same. So at different times of year, you're getting peppers that may have been not that ripe and were ripened in the box in transit that might not have as high sugar content.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Rick Orlando, how do people find out more about all the things that you do, the tours, the products, everything?
You can go to rickorlando.com. There's no K in Rick. You can go to chefrick.com. They all point to me.
Man, you are the best.
We had fun.
We'll talk to you soon. Support comes from the Hungry Chicken, an old-fashioned country store. Coffee and breakfast sandwiches, pies and pastries, soft ice cream, and a plethora of local crafts. Route 5 Schenectady, across from Kiwanis Park, HungryChickenFarmMarket.com. The Hudson Valley Garlic Festival, Saugerties, 2 days of food, crafts, musicians, chef lectures, and dozens of varieties of garlic, September 27th and 28th, hvgf.org. And Sapbush Hollow Farm to Table Cafe in Schoharie, 50 minutes from Albany with EV charging, open Saturdays 9 to 2 through November, Sapbush Store, nope, sorry Ray, you're very incompetent, sapbushfarmstore.com/cafe. Yeah, it's been a long week. Listen, cut me a little slack. Rick Orlando is the best. Thank you for being here. Thank you for calling everybody, and thanks for the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Blessed relief. This is it. This week has come to an end. I hope you have a lovely weekend if you have the days off. We'll see you Monday and explore the exciting world of colorectal surgery. We'll see you then.